Blog Talk Radio.
Hey folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron here. We're just waiting to get Tony Pennekow online here, and we'll get started. Tony, hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. And we have a couple guests on tonight, a couple more MMA guests. We got Holly coming on at about 15 past the hour to talk about UFC 133, and also to do some interviewing. We have first hour, we have at 8:30 Eastern, we have Jens Pulver, who is a UFC legend. Holly's only going to be on that interview. And then we have, he's pretty big news. He's probably better known for his early days in the UFC, but lately he's kind of been all over the place, different leagues. He's in the WWE for a little while. I fought Uriah Faber a few times. Some pretty big battles there. And then the second hour, we have a guy from Australia. And I'm pretty sure it's the first time we had a guy that just does judo. He's qualifying for the 2012 Olympics. A guy named Ivo Dos Santos. And I'm not sure if he's related to the junior Dos Santos, famous in the UFC, of course. But maybe we'll find out. So about 9:15, we'll be on with him. And other than that, we have a little bit of boxing and MMA news. I actually did go to the Friday night fights this past week. It was pretty interesting. Nobody responded to my card giving out, so we don't have any guests off of that, unfortunately. But I did get to meet James Tooney, who was there at the end of the fight. He is there for some Russian heavyweight. He was in that corner of the last fight of the night. And that guy was kind of funny because he was in a 4-round fight, and the 4th round there was about 30 seconds left, and he was leaning on the guy, and he's like blowing kisses to some lady in the audience. But also Roberto Duran was there, shook his hand. But he doesn't seem to know any English at all, even now. He didn't speak a word. He just kind of looked at me and nodded. And his manager stepped up and took my card. Yeah. He looked good, though. He was having fun. Leon Spinks was there. I didn't get a chance to give him my card. But, it was a good event. There was one bit of controversy with Edison Miranda and Yordanis Despain, who we talked about last week. Might not be a mismatch. Well, it was a pretty even fight. And then Pantera Miranda there went for an uppercut. And basically it was one of those situations where, yeah, technically it was a low blow, but it was incidental. And the ref called the fight just when it was getting good. I think there was a round before that. Miranda just actually stood right in the center of the ring and let Despain hit him like at least 5 times right on the chin. And it wasn't one of those like, you know, I'm just going to show you I can take it. Even though he said afterwards it was that kind of a moment, it was more like, geez, you know, I can't believe that guy didn't just get knocked out from that. He got hit with some hard shots, and you could tell by his face, like, he was feeling them. But there was a little bit of an intimidation type of, you know, reasoning behind it, I think, but it just seemed like, you know, it was one of the worst times to do it in the fight. But what happened, I actually was sitting next to a photographer from ESPN for most of the fight, and he came over and showed me the actual shot after the low blow that ended the fight. And what I saw from my angle was that guy had one of those big cups, and basically his pants were kind of sagging in the front. So when Miranda came up with the uppercut, it basically kind of arced and grazed the cloth on his shorts, you know, in the midsection area. But where it connected was right on the belt line. So the photographer comes over to me and brings up the picture, and boom, there's the shot right on the belt line. So the referee, Victor Coolidge, got a lot of crowd noise and pissed off people after that fight. But the main event was a little better. There was another sort of controversial stoppage, but if you watch the replay, it's pretty clear. The guy didn't get up when he should have. The main event was Victor Caio and Anthony Peterson. Lamont Peterson. I keep calling him Anthony. Peterson did a really good job. I really was kind of wondering what the scorecards were going to look like, but then when I came home and I checked out the ESPN, it looked like Teddy Atlas had him way ahead. And I thought he did land the harder punches, but I figured KO had won a few more rounds than they gave him credit for because of his speed. And he kind of danced around the whole fight and really just used more punch output than power. And what really struck me about Peterson was just his focus. He just seemed like he was locked in on the target, moving around the ring well, landing really good counters, fighting a really defensive fight, and not to lose his focus. He really didn't get caught in too many toe-to-toe slugfests in the center of the ring. He really was a smart fighter. And then it came to the last round, and he just overwhelmed him with punches. And it was a surprise, I think, to him and the crowd that the only time Caio went down was in that final round. And the way he went down, he was kind of pointing to the back of his head going, it was hit illegally. And you look at the replay, and he was. I mean, it was a looping punch that was thrown so fast and hard you couldn't tell where it landed, but it did land right in the back of the neck. And yeah, maybe the ref didn't see it. He should have called it, but there's no excuse for Caio to just stay on the ground and take the count when he had 14 seconds left in the fight. He was actually down on a knee when the 9 count came, and then when it got to 10, he wasn't up yet. So if he had been up at 10, he would have got decision. Big difference between a decision and a knockout loss, but I think he still would have lost. But either way, it was a good fight. And there were a few good undercard fights there as well. Did you get any chances to watch any Saturday boxing or anything like that?
What the hell was Saturday?
What was the date?
Yeah.
I think it was the 31st.
No, I did not. I have trouble remembering my days anymore. You know what's scary, Rich?
What?
You call me the Rain Man of boxing because I can literally remember the statistics of a fight that happened before I was even born, which is pretty pathetic. But if you ask me what I did last week, I can't remember. Here comes the patriarch of the Pentecost family. It's Papa Tornado. Just walked in the room. Channel 99, top ranked boxing. I said we turn it on to get some points live on the air.
I don't have top rank.
That'll give me something to do when you MMA guys are talking.
Yeah, there you go.
No, last week I did not get to catch the fights on Friday night. I was at the Philly fight. You know, we did a big family night, so I didn't get to see the Miranda fight live. And Saturday, I don't think there were any major fights on Saturday, at least televised. If there were, I didn't get a chance to see them. Saturday night, you're going to get a good kick out of this. a local club close to where I live that I've gone to many times. They were having a Christmas in July, and I threw a joke at the owner. I'm like, "Do you want me to dress up as Santa Claus? Ha ha ha!" And he said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, I'll do it." So I brought my bag there with the suit in it, and I said, "I would have done it, no problem." And then I put the bag back in the kitchen. They gave me a free cup. We drank all night for free. And then by the time the band was on, I never got the suit on, but I drank for free all night. So, no, to answer your question in a short version, no, I did not get to see any fights this past weekend. I wasn't home Friday. I did, Rich, you'll enjoy this, being a baseball fan like you are. I was at the stadium. The Phillies did a great game. They did a great fireworks presentation after the game. Then they said, stay tuned for the following announcement. That's when they announced on the live screen that they made a deal to get Hunter Pence.
Ah, yeah, Red Sox, you know, pitcher's pitching tonight for the first time, Eric Bedard.
The odds maker had that argument two times in the next upcoming four seasons, because they're taking a Philly Sox World Series and an even changer at Super Bowl.
Yeah, actually, the Eagles... I wrote an article about the Eagles. They did so many great off-season acquisitions there at the close of the lockout. Yeah, it's got a pretty strong defense now, and got rid of the backup there, got a new backup on offense for Michael Vick.
I'll tell you, I'm going to training camp on Saturday. I go up once a year. What happened at camp yesterday actually reminded me of something that saw happen at Boston that one time when I was sitting in the front row. I don't know if you heard this. I was at the news in Philadelphia, but during practice yesterday, one of the defensive linemen collapsed with a seizure.
Yeah, I did hear that.
Yeah, they looked kind of like brain, not a brain aneurysm, but there was a medical term for what happened. And he's either got to get like surgery or radiation because like, the blood vessels in his brain are not like functioning and they're bleeding or whatever. And actually, one thing that was kind of unlucky when it happened yesterday, the guy that drafted in the first round was a former firefighter and emergency medical personnel. So he kind of took control of the situation until the ambulance got there. But I was in a fighting card. Actually, I was fighting on the card. We had an afternoon evening show at Lock Haven back in 97. And in the afternoon show, I was working, because they had the Marine Corps girls. My coach's granddaughters were in little cheerleading outfits, and they were being the Marine Corps girls. And so I was kind of helping them out, and I'd open the ropes for them and stuff. Well, during one bout, one of the kids got hit with a shot, and he went into an epileptic fit. And it was pretty damn scary. And one thing that actually saved him, I mean, they took the shoes off. You know, they were holding them down. And two of the ringside physicians that I know very well, actually, were going to knock his teeth out to prevent his tongue from him swallowing his tongue. And just by chance, the coach from Kentucky was there, George Ginter, who's an anesthesiologist. I know George very well. And he did, like, a nerve hold on him and unhinged his jaw. It was scary, you know. I'm sitting there with these, like, 8-9-year-old little girls, and I'm like, girls, like, go in the back, get me a hot dog or something. I'm like, just get away from the front of the ring while this kid, you know, I don't know if he's going to die in front of us. So I got them out of there. They wheeled the stretch out in the head and met him back and out of there. Man, that was some scary shit.
Yeah, sounds like it.
And then what made it even tougher on me was, I mean, I sat there no more than 10 feet away from where he was when he was on the ground and they were taking his shoes off, taking his gloves off, and they're trying to stabilize him. And then I had to stand in that very same ring just a couple hours later. And you don't think that's not in your mind. Obviously there have been cards where there have been fighters that have gotten hurt, cards that have been fatalities. Not always in the main event either. There's been, I remember one back in Atlantic City around 1999. There was a guy, Paul Vaden, and I forget the name of the guy who played. I think it was Stefan Johnson. And Vaden, who was not much of a puncher, knocked Johnson out. And that was the one of the semi-main events. So this guy that's being carried out of the ring on a stretcher with an oxygen mask on, you know, that's a very disturbing image, but the main event fighters that still had to go on after that were back in their locker rooms, so they don't have to see that. For me, I'm sitting there 10 feet away. I saw it. And you don't think it disturbed me, then you're damn wrong. But then it was like later that night, I'm getting my hands taped up, and I'm like, damn, I'm going to be standing in that very same spot where that kid was, you know, unconscious and a future earlier. And I got in and traced punches in there. Yeah, it was on my mind a lot, but when it came down to the time to focus, you know, you had to focus, you had to get it done.
Right. Well, we actually had a pretty big Strike Force event last weekend. Fedor versus Henderson was the main event. Fedor lost his third fight in a row. I know I kept making the mistake saying that he'd already lost three in a row last week. Maybe I was being clairvoyant. But Henderson did pretty well. He knocked him out with some pretty decent punches there. He ended up on the ground himself, scrambled back up to his feet, and then punched him right through the upright, basically. When Fedor was on all fours, he came up right between the two arms from behind and just popped him right in the jaw. And it was a little bit of a flash knockout. He was out on his feet by the time he did get up, and the fight already been stopped. He does have one more fight left on his contract, and you know, seeing that he's just the whole promotion deal with M1, doesn't look like he'll ever be fighting the UFC. If he does end up, you know, having one more fight, and then that'll probably be it for him. So probably give him a pushover, which he really needs, and he'll retire with a win. But I doubt he'll ever get into the UFC. Dana White has been notoriously against him going to the UFC. There was a time when he was interested in him, but the whole promotion deal where M1 has to be on the bill, Strikeforce/M1 Global presents, you know, that's even the way I labeled this card, because that's the deal he signed. And Dana White's never going to do that with the UFC. So I think we've seen the last of Fedor, except for maybe one more fight in Strikeforce, and then he'll go back to doing Sambo and Russia and all that stuff. He did actually come out very aggressively, but he was way too sloppy. You know, you could tell he was desperate to win and just didn't count for what Henderson could do. A big surprise was Maurice Tate beating Malouz Conan by submission. That was the first time Conan had ever been submitted. And Conan was thrown out of the whole Strength Force League after the fight. And there's some speculation that that all has to do with the whole deal with Alistair Overeem also getting cut because they all fight for the same promoter, Golden Glory, over in Holland. It's a pretty decent team. And then another guy, John Olav Einemo, was also cut at the same time. And even though they're all, except for Alistair Overeem, they're coming off losses, I think it's definitely a personal beef with that promotion. And Dana White's back to his old tricks again, you know, trying to intimidate people and, you know, not making smart moves. Conan's a very able and fought to the fourth round. So, you know, she did very well in that fight. There's no reason to cut her. But, of course, Dana White doesn't like women's MMA either, so it's probably something to do with it. Tim Kennedy and Robbie Lawler had a very, very good fight. Kennedy won by unanimous decision there. Lawler just couldn't get a rhythm going. He was using a better strategy in the first round than any other round, but just wasn't throwing enough punches to make it work. And Kennedy just kind of out-wrestled him, bled all over him. He had a big cut on his head, and just smothered him on the ground in the next two rounds and won the fight. Paul Daly lost to Tyron Woodley by decision. That was a completely one-sided fight. Who knows what's going to happen with Paul Daly? It doesn't seem like he's going to stick around Strikeforce that long with, you know, performances like that. Scott Smith, another guy who's been around for a while, fought Tarek Saffedine to a unanimous decision loss there. And then the preliminaries had Jesus Cavalcante versus Bobby Green. Cavalcante won the split decision. Tyler Stinson beat Eduardo Pamplona by knockout in the first round. Alexis Davis beat Julie Kedzie by unanimous decision. And Derek Brunson beat Lumumba Sayers by submission in the first round. Our former guest there didn't do too well. Gabriel Salinas Jones beat Brian Humes by Brabo choke. Never heard of that. In the third round there. And we're going to get Holly on the line here to talk about UFC 133 coming up this weekend. One second here, we'll get her on.
Whatever you get out of the...
Every story we could talk about while we're waiting. Kelly Pavlik pulled out of his fight with Darryl Cunningham this weekend. What do you think that's all about?
I don't know, but his excuse that I had read today, that he was upset that they had offered, Mikel Kessler, like $3.5 million to fight Lucian Ute, so they only offered Pavel $1.5 million, so he was mad about that. I think there's a lot more than that. I feel sorry for Kelly Pavlik because I really like him as a fighter. I think he's a good person. He's a good fighter. But the last few years, I think ever since that loss, he's really been a lost soul. We have the chronic problems with his hand, the staph infection. He pulled out of a few fights there. Lost out on a big money fight with Paul Williams. Lost the title to Sergio Martinez in a very close fight. Now he's coming in combat now. He's been in rehabilitation for alcohol problems. And I think he's still having some demons. And as a fight fan and as a human being, I hope he's able to get past them.
Yeah, it's interesting. They didn't come up with any public excuse, and usually that doesn't mean anything good. It's traditionally something that a fighter is ashamed of or something. That's the reason why. We'll have to see. Maybe the story will come out eventually.
But like, I don't know if I want to go to
Right. Let's try. Oh, I guess this should work. One more time. Come on, Hawk. Bring up the phone.
Get her away.
Calling? Yeah, calling right now. Bernard Hopkins has changed his tunes for MMA. Did you hear that?
I saw it already. I pulled it up on the news.
And there was actually a news article that just posted on our blog. That was kind of funny today. About how he's going to be the new spokesman for Prada Eyewear. All ritzy on you, Tony. You're a Philadelphia guy. I don't know why the stories are coming up. Nothing's working for me tonight. What the hell? Computer's all dragging. Being a punk. Beeping at me. What the hell?
There we go.
Yeah, Bernard says he now likes and respects MMA fighters after once famously putting down the sport years ago. Which, can't say the same for Chad Ochocinco. I don't know if you saw a little rant the other day, but he's sponsored by Tap Out now. So he was talking smack about George St. Pierre. And he says he'll fuck him up. Exact words. So he's getting back a little bit to his antics, even though he had a unique meeting there with the reporters in Boston the other day, and he asked for a group hug, and he told them that, you know, he was going to be a little bit toned down from now on. So we'll have to see. It's a see it to believe it, I guess. But, yeah, that made the news. And, you know, he was just talking smack about MMA in general. And he's done some boxing training himself, but I don't know if he's ever tried MMA training. I doubt he would say those things if he had.
Come on, Mark.
So, who knows? All right, I don't know what's going on here with Holly. I'm going to give her one last shot. Let's go. Mess that a little later. Figure out what's going on there. And what to do with the UFC preview without her for a second. So we get an answer there. And we'll get Jen's Pulver on there. What? Yeah, it does go much better with somebody that can actually argue some of the matchups and theories. Well, what can you do? She gave me the wrong number. She's not picking up. Something's going on. She's emailing. So, my computer's like retarded right now. Just does not want to work. Come on, computer. There we go. Yeah, well, the main event for UFC 133 is obviously Tito Ortiz versus Rashad Evans. It's a rematch of a 2007 fight. And it should be interesting because it was a tie first fight. Evans is trying to stay in title contention. He's supposed to fight John Bones Jones after they had passed their fight. And basically, Tito was willing to really prove people wrong, thinking that he should be retired already. He surprised a lot of folks by beating Ryan Bader his last fight. Rashad Evans hasn't been in the cage since May of last year, so he's going to have to shake off some ring rust in that fight. But I like Rashad's chances because, basically he's a much improved fighter since their fight, since he fought Tito, and Tito has just been all over the map. He's had a ton of losses. They do have a couple of common opponents. They both lost to Lyoto Machida, and even though Tito heads out, he didn't edge out, he lost, but he got the decision, and Rashad didn't. He got knocked out. Evans knocked out Forrest Griffin, and Tito lost to him by decision. So I think that says a lot about matching them up. And I think Evans is going to be able to knock him out, or at least use the kind of strategy that's going to win the fight for him by decision. We also have Vitor Belfort versus Yoshihiro Akiyama. And that's going to be a good fight, I think. But the Japanese guys have really had no success. Not no success, but very little success making the transition to the UFC. And Akiyama's lost 2 of 3 since his went over from Japan from Dream Fights. Belfort's was on a 5-fight win streak, too, before he lost by a vicious front kick from Anderson Silva. And I don't think... he's going to really struggle here in this fight. We also have Chad Mendez versus Ronnie Yahya, the WBC guy there. I think Mendez is going to win that one. Hendricks versus Pierce, Johnny Hendricks versus Mike Pierce. Mike's another former guest of ours, so we're going to be rooting for him, of course. We got Mike Thomas Brown versus Nam Fan, and Mike Brown's the guy from Norwich there, the wrestler I like to talk about. I think I'm definitely going to be rooting for the Vietnamese guy who very well in the Ultimate Fighter, but then he had a really rough outing in his first UFC fight. It was a controversial decision there. He actually, a lot of people thought he won the fight. So it was one of the bad judging decisions. Left everybody with a sour taste in their mouth there. We have Alexander Gustafsson versus Matt Hamill. It's another fight. It's going to be pretty interesting. I think Hamill's going to win that one based on his overall experience. Another guy with a lot of experience, he's 39 years old, is Jorge Rivera. He's fighting Constantinos Filippou. And Rivera's been around. He had a really controversial fight with Michael Bisping. Bisping supposedly spat in his trainer on in his corner there, Rivera's corner, and also hit him with an illegal knee. And that was really the last hurrah for Rivera if he doesn't win, so he's going to have a lot of incentive to win this fight. Then we got Mike Pyle versus Rory McDonald. I like McDonald's chances in that fight. Dennis Hallman versus Brian Ebersole. These guys are going to put on an interesting fight, I think, because they both have over 60 fights in cage or ring all over the world. They're kind of new to the UFC. And Coleman has a few more fights, but Ebersole upset what's his name? Chris Lytle, another one of our former guests, in his first fight in the UFC. So that was a pretty big win for him. That was back in February. So I think he's got a better shot at winning this one. Then we got Ivan Menjivar versus Nick Pace. I like Pace in that one. And Rafael Natal versus Paul Bradley. Bradley actually was going to be in the UFC a lot sooner, but he ended up having to leave the Ultimate Fighter due to some skin problem that was contagious. So Bradley's back now. We'll see if he can fit in there. And it's going to be at the Wells Fargo Center down there in Philly, Tony. You going to Are you going to stop by? I guess that's a no.
Wells Fargo Center. I know it well. I've been there when it was formerly known as the Core State Center. I was there when it was called the First Union Center, or as we like to say in Philadelphia, the FU Center. I was there when it was the Wachovia Center. Now it's the Wells Fargo Center. I've been to boxing matches there, hockey games, pro wrestling, you name it, I've been there. But I will not be there this weekend. My running joke with my one, I love the UFC, it's the greatest thing in the world, friend. A few years ago when they had the first UFC bout in Philadelphia, and I told him I had press passes and 4 free tickets. And he said, oh, you could hear it, like almost like stuttering like the 3-year-old on the phone. And he said, you can give me one, right? I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm going to take your brother, your cousin, your one friend. Oh, what about me? I'm like, nah, you don't want to go. Yeah, I do. I'm like, nah, you don't. And I was just being a jerk about it. It was like, bad comedy.
Oh, we finally get the right number for Holly, just in time. We got a call from Jen's Pulver any minute now. So we're going to get her on, and then we're going to do a brief introduction, and then get Jen's on. All right. It's about time.
This is Holly.
Hey, there she is.
Hey, sorry about that.
She's an idiot, Holly.
No, it was totally my fault. Totally my fault.
No. Don't abstain Rich from any of the blame. I am still trying to blame him for the Lindbergh baby kidnapping.
Oh, I see.
I wasn't even around then, but hey.
It wasn't about it. You were clever enough to pull it off. I actually stole that from a Beavis and Butthead episode when they accused one of them of being part of a massacre in, like, 1969. They're like, and how could that be possible since he wasn't even born yet? He's very clever.
Well, they did actually, speaking of unsolved crimes, they did supposedly catch D.B. Cooper last week.
His name is, what, like, D.L. or something like that? It's like, totally similar to that name, and it took them all this time to figure it out.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. They didn't even know for years if he had even survived. Now they say they caught him. But anyway, we kind of got you on late here, Holly. We've got to get Jen's Pulver on pretty soon here. But I did want to get your take on at least the main event of UFC 133. Who do you think is going to win that one?
I think it's going to be Evans. I want Tito Ortiz to win because, you know, he's getting to that point where he really ought to retire, but I think Evans is going to win. I think he's too fast.
Yeah, the only thing I worry about is his ring rust, you know. He hasn't fought since May of last year. And, you know, the thing that equalized it, I think, is his hatred for John Jones now. He wants to fight that guy so bad, he's going to, you know, just rip through anybody in his way, so.
Right. Well, then again, Ortiz almost beat him once before, but Ortiz got a couple of points taken off for grabbing the fence. Otherwise, he would have beat Evans.
That was like back when I first started watching, when I was living up Cape Cod.
That was a while ago, so I don't know. I think Tito, you know, he's been through some back surgeries and all this other stuff, and I don't know. I think Evans is just too fast.
I wouldn't put it past Tito to pull off the upset.
I kind of hope he does. I'm less than I dislike Evans. So.
Well, we'll see. All right, we're going to get Jen's on the phone. Hopefully we got the right number for him. We got it from his manager, so I think it is.
Hello? Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 206-418-885.
Let's not give out that number.
Cover up the numbers. You're a good guy. Thank you. Thank you for that one.
Yeah. Oh, where's the beep?
Where's the beep?
Oh, it's beep? Oh. Jens, this is Rabble Rouser. This is Bergeron. We're trying to get in touch with you here. For the show, we'll give you a try back in a few minutes. You can also, you have the option of giving us a call. The number is 347-324-3228. Trying to get you on the Fight News Unlimited Combat Support Show here. We got all the co-hosts waiting to talk to you. So we'll try you back in a few minutes, or you can connect with us. So, hey, if it wasn't for technical difficulties, we wouldn't have any difficulties at all.
Right. We get to talk more about
the UFC. Yeah, I actually did a preview for the whole deal last night for one of my other employers, opposingjews.com. Mm-hmm. And so I looked over the whole card. But I know that there's been a lot of changes to the whole card lineup this time around. And I think... some of these fights, you know, wouldn't normally be on the main card, you know, the preliminary fights, but I like some of the matchups.
Well, and I'm confused about the Mike Brown fight being, you know, the second Facebook fight. I'm surprised that he's not higher up, but I guess, you know, he's fighting Van Fan, so maybe that put him lower on the totem pole.
Yeah, and I like Brown's chances in that fight, of course.
Yeah, I can't imagine Mike Brown losing that fight since Nam Phan is kind of famous for not listening to his corner.
Well, he had that fight that a lot of people thought he won. You know, it was one of those decisions where I didn't like it, but I could understand it. Mm-hmm. You know, because I thought his name there, guy he fought, was a lot more active in the fight. He threw, even though he didn't really connect with a lot of punches, Leonard Garcia was the guy. He definitely had more drive and output and energy, and Nam was landing some good shots and everything and putting up a good fight, but he just didn't have the energy, I think. And the judges really got confused by that. And he was like, you know, coming out like a whirlwind, and Fan was just trying to fight a smart fight the whole time. So I don't think he's showed enough aggression to get that win. But a lot of other people say, you know, hands down he won, the judges are blind, whatever. The fight I'm more interested in seeing actually is Holman versus Ebersole, because both of those guys have over 60 fights.
Right, they're very well, very evenly matched.
Right.
I think.
And Ebersole beat Chris Lytle in his first fight in UFC, so I think they have high hopes for him. We'll see what happens.
Well, they both got about a gajillion fights, you know, on their record.
Right, and Holman, I guess, has stripped his record last night. He had 39 submissions out of his 50 wins. So definitely he's probably going to lean towards that. Ebersole kind of has a weird style. He's very well-rounded, and one of the things that I didn't see in his fight with Lytle, but I remember watching an Australia card. I caught one of his fights, and he was punching the other guy in the thigh, like, trying to give him a Charlie horse. Almost the whole fight, he just kept trying. And it made me wonder whether that's legal in the UFC or what the deal. Why use that move if I'm around?
Well, I mean that move worked for I think it was Chick Congo who beat I can't remember his name. That's not awesome. I'll fight, but I guess. Anyway, he stopped one of his opponents to punch his to the thigh. We had the guy tapped out.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was probably on the ground, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
this one, the fight I saw with Ibasol, he was on the feet, just reaching down and punching him in the leg. Kind of funny, just watching. But also we got Vitor Belfort versus Yoshihiro Akiyama. And before we get you in the air, I was talking about how the Japanese guys have not done well in the UFC.
No, because they don't have that fallback move of soccer ball kicking up to the head.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's that much, or it's just that, you know, because of the pride downfall, they just don't have good opponents to face anymore over there to really get well-rounded. You know, they're fighting a bunch of guys that haven't proved themselves, they don't really have a name. And they're used to doing so well because none of the guys that used to challenge them are around. They come over to the UFC, and it's like, oh, this is what a real fight's like. And Akiyama lost 2 out of his 3 UFC fights already, so that's going to be the third one.
What
was he calling? Akiyama? Yeah. They call him that. Yes, they do. All right.
I like Vitor Belfort for that fight, though, myself.
Yeah, me too. Definitely. No, we only have Jens calling in yet, but we're going to try to call out to him one more time.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message system. 206-419-8521. He's not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options. To leave a callback number, press 5.
Jens, this is Rambo Rouser Rich Bergeron again, trying to get in touch with you. We're going to give you one more try in about 5 minutes or so here, try to get you on the line. If not, we'll have to reschedule, I guess, unfortunately. But again, you can try to reach us at 347-324-3228 if you get this message. Thanks. What can you do?
What can you do?
So, Holly, what have you been up to lately?
Just living the dream in Colorado.
Yeah. You've been hit by the heat wave out there? Everybody else is suffering from it?
No. There's no such thing as a heat wave out here. The hottest it's gotten is 90 degrees where I live.
Yeah.
And not like a sweltering 90 degrees. It's a breeze, kind of very comfortable 90 degrees.
Well, that's good.
Yes, it's very nice. How are you enjoying the desert?
Oh, well, it's getting bad out here. It's like 104 every day. It's actually 101 right now. It's 6 o'clock at night. But not really. I mean, they call it monsoon season. It's funny because, you know, we might get one storm a week from the season. And when it does rain, it's really not much. We did have a thunderstorm at night, so once while I was here, but that was actually the remnants of Hurricane Arlene, so it was kind of bad. There was a lot of rain from that, but that was the worst I've seen since I've been here. But it's going to be going out to Extreme Couture this weekend. They're having there's a big grappling tournament. The guys from Takedown Radio are going to be out there doing their show. So I'm going to hook up with Scott Casper, our old buddy. Well, I don't think Randy's going to be there. I've already interviewed Ryan, so, you know, he's going to actually be a guest on the show, so he'll be around. But I'll probably see some MMA fighters famous other than Ryan and be the host there.
That just sounds like a lot of fun. I'm looking for not the upcoming UFC, but the next UFC, because that will be in Denver, I believe.
Oh, so you're going to do ringside play-by-play?
We'll see about that. See how long the cell phone battery lasts. We'll see.
Yeah, I just went to the Cosmopolitan this last Friday for Friday Night Fights. It's your buddy Ken Shamrock's next... his name there, James Toney. That was sort of interesting. He didn't show up for the part of the fight where they were announcing all this there. But of course, I recognize him when I seen him at the last fight. He shows up for, he was in the fight, some Russian guy, heavyweight, his sparring partner or something, I don't know. But he shows up and he's all blowing out with jewelry. Makes me wonder if you can afford all that stuff. What's he trying to fight MMA for? Stick to boxing. Well, he shook my hand. He took my card. He didn't mean anything about being on the show, but.
No, he must want to get somebody else.
Yeah. Well, he actually seemed to be very nice in person with the fans and it. Until the last person left the place, it seemed like he was standing there posing with everybody for pictures. Overall, he had a very...
I didn't say he wasn't a cool guy. He said he cursed everybody out.
Well, when it comes to opponents, he talks trash.
He says the punches. That's what I kind of like.
Well, did you see the... Strikeforce event this past weekend, Holly?
I did.
What do you think about that
one? I was shocked.
Shocked?
Actually, so, but I was shocked.
You thought Fedor was going to win?
Well, you always think Fedor is going to win, but I was pleasantly shocked, actually. I really wanted Dan Henderson to win.
I didn't really have a favorite, but I kind of figured Fedor would lose, and my theory on Fedor is that Dana White really made a big mistake by not signing him when he had the chance, because
okay.
even though he would have had the co-promote and everything like that, we would have had a lot less time thinking Fedor was this, you know, unbelievable fighter, when the reality is, for years, he just fought punching bags.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. He fought a whole lot of nobodies.
Yeah, probably
time.
The toughest guy he fought in those years since Pride was Matt Lindland. And Matt Lindland would have had a better shot of beating him if Fedor didn't hold the ropes in the fight, the Bodog fight that they had.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even get a point taken off for holding onto the ropes when Lindland was trying to get a takedown. And,
he's had some impressive results. I mean, he had a very impressive knockout against Andrei Arlovsky, but then again, Andrei Arlovsky was on a downhill slide at that time also.
Yeah.
So, and then, I don't know, I just think that his time is done, he's done.
Well, he does have one more fight left on his contract, so I'm pretty sure they're going to stick him in with another tomato can and let him go out on a high note. But it's definitely, it's definitely getting to the point where, when even the announcer says he's the greatest MMA fighter ever, it's like, what are you trying to sell me?
We were comparing him to, I guess, Superstar. I can't even remember now, but it was, they were making ridiculous comparisons.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at all the fighters that have been the best of the best in the UFC heavyweight division. And, you know, he hasn't fought any of those guys. He fought a few tough fights in Pride, but nobody of the caliber that's been, you know, steady UFC champ. You know, he ever got to fight Randy Couture, which was the fight that everybody wanted to see when Dana was first trying to sign him. And despite this whole co-promotion thing, I think a really smart move for Dana to bring him in and just expose him. You know, now he's got him under his contract now under the other umbrella of Strikeforce, but he's so long it kind of looks like a failure.
Right.
And he's talking smack now, like, oh yeah, and he's almost cheering on his own fighter who's now, which makes it odd. But Fedor's got one more contracted fight left. I think he'll do it and then be done with it. But the real surprise, I think, was after the fight, they got rid of Marlos Cronin. It was a really, really good fight. I mean, he went right into the front against Misha Tate. And, you know, obviously Dana doesn't like women's MMA, but I think it's become a personal thing with the Golden Glory team over there in Holland, because they represent what's this called?
He released Misha?
No, they released Cone because she lost the fight. You know, she was she had the title, you know, and she's still maybe number two or number three in the division. Just because she lost a tough fight and got caught in a submission. But she's part of that same Golden Glory team that Alistair Overeem is. And he got caught and didn't take that fight in the tournament. So they exercised their right to cut. But I think that was a little bit of a mutual thing. But it was always also personal. Because once they got rid of Cronin, they also got rid of another guy, John Olav Einemo, lost a tough fight to
I'm curious to see what he's going to do about the female fighters from Strikeforce, because it'd be a real shame to not see Cyborg, Christiane, whatever, Cyborg fight in the... it would be a real shame. There's a lot of good fighters, a lot of good female fighters, and it would be a shame not fight just because he said he will never have female fighters in the UFC.
Uh-huh.
Just ridiculous.
Well, Cyborg's no longer under contract by Strikeforce. They let her contract and signed her. And Gina Carano just pulled out of her last fight, even though there's news that she's going to be back soon. So I think they lost the two best there. And I don't know what's going to happen there, but just like he's going to want to get rid of Strikeforce all at some point, he's going to try, I think, to get rid of the whole women's division.
Well, if he doesn't have those two stars, there's really, I mean, he's going to feel like there's no point in having female fighters. So that will be his patience.
Right.
Well, I don't have Cronin to have Cyborg, so what's the point?
Yeah, I don't know what he's thinking.
And that's too bad, because there are always very popular fights on Strikeforce. So, and it's not because, you know, they're just, you know, hot chicks, because let's face it, Cyborg is not a hot chick. So she's not even a hot dude.
Her husband that.
You know, if they ever get into any kind of fight, that's an even match.
Right? Well, you know, they have talked about her fighting guys.
I think she could.
Well, I used to think, actually, when they were interviewing her, one of the first questions they asked her, you know, was, you know, how much did it help being in high school wrestling on the boys' team? And she said, yeah, it was a big deal. So... It's one of those things where it's such a minority, you know, the women in MMA, it's such a minority that they almost automatically have to, you know, practice your diet.
Well, when I first visited the Lions Den in Susanville, I went with his fight receiver to watch his son wrestle. And there was a girl on the boys' wrestling team, because it wasn't really, I mean, you could say it was a boys' wrestling team. It was just a wrestling team because she was the only girl. And that girl was beating everybody. That girl almost beat his son. And he's a really good, his son's a really good wrestler.
Well, there was a story years ago, I think it was last year, early this year, where a kid had climbed to take the wrestling match in the state tournament because he would have had to fight a girl. He said no. His religion or something like that. So he said he wouldn't allow it or he wouldn't do it. He just took the forfeit or let the girl get the forfeit.
Wow.
Karana, my story right here. She's found him back by the end of the year. I still think that the issue was with the last fight when she had pulled out. It blows my mind. I don't know how long they wouldn't say it unless there's something suspicious or embarrassing.
She started her period.
Well, they made it a big deal, you know, since the doctors cleared her to resume training. You know, so it's definitely a medical issue. You know, so I don't know if it was something as tangible as that. A lot of people have speculated that maybe she was pregnant and she had to get an abortion or something. But that's you know, strictly her, obviously. But it would make sense. You know, that was the only thing that I could think of myself. But who knows? She's actually more famous now for her Hollywood stuff. She's in the Haywire, which they've been putting the previews out. It looks pretty good. Like a female James.
And, what?
She's like a female James Bond in the movie. Just
nice.
Picks a lot of ass. Okay. So I don't know when that's even coming out. We got the previews making waves out there. Other than that, trying to see what else we have for news. We've got about 10 minutes so before we have to call our next guest. So this one guy we're going to have on the his manager hasn't given me any other number yet. We'll get him next week. We were supposed to go through the same guy for 2 guests next week. One of them was going to be Houston Alexander, another UFC guy.
Yeah.
He's fighting on the smaller circuits, so it's probably off everybody's radar. But he's all right.
Well, his last knockout in the UFC, his daughter punched harder than that. And I'm like, oh, then you're going to get a knockout because he knocked him out.
He's actually the guy that I have seen in person. I saw him at UFC 78 in the main event, if I remember correctly. And he ended up getting caught really early and pounded out. So it wasn't very impressive to me, but I was rooting for him. I don't know if you heard this, but War Machine is out of prison. He's War Machine. Do you know who that is? John Copenhagen?
Hmm.
It's probably because he's made more news outside the camp.
Oh, was he a former Lion's Den fighter? I didn't know he was in prison.
He might have been,
yeah. He was a former Lion's Den, I think so. Wow,
he was released from the UFC in 2008 because he made some controversial comments about the death of Evan Tanner on his MySpace blog. And he was with Bellator, released before he ever got a chance to debut because he made some blog comments. You know, nobody reads MySpace anymore.
Right.
I saw
that's kind of
on the radio about how MySpace is so unpopular. that the guy that everybody's friends with hasn't updated his profile in over a year. It's Copenhaver. He was in jail for a little while. Very public dust ups there. He had a wife or something like that, like Tito. And he ended up getting in a huge fight at a convention or something, or a party at the producer's house. And there was another incident where they had to put a spit bag over his head. So I think that's why he was in jail, because he says he cried when he got out of jail. No problem when he was in jail. What's that? You turning up the TV there, Cody?
That was my computer.
Oh. Yeah, he cried when he got out of jail because he was about what he put his wife through. He would stay up at night and look at his wife sleep, and he was upset with himself because of what he put through. But he got lucky because while he was in jail, he ended up getting some kind of a virus. He was in solitary confinement, and he didn't like rooming with other dudes. He said, random dudes. He says, the first 6 months I was in general population, and the last 6 months I was in the hole. To be honest, most guys, they hate the hole. It's punishment. I loved it because I didn't like living with random guys in my cell, random guys I didn't know. It was awkward, and I didn't like it. The only stress I ever had in there was stress over the possibility of getting into an altercation and then getting into more trouble. So once I was in the hall, that possibility ended. And I would think that the big hand grenade tattoo on his neck would probably attract people to try to fight him. But I think a lot of people must have known he was a fighter anyway.
Well, yeah, and if they know that, they're
going to
try to pick him up.
Yeah, they might try to gang up on him and beat him up, but, Mike Tyson was in jail, and he never got picked on. So maybe it's one of those situations where they're just like, yeah, it's not worth the bother.
Mike Tyson is a little scary than most people.
Definitely. I think that's about it for all the news stories that I had on MMA to talk about. There's an interesting story about the Aquaman, though. She's going to be fighting a boxing match, celebrity boxing, in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, no.
She's been doing a lot of TV interviews. It's kind of funny.
And I'm wondering why people pay her for her interviews. Who cares anymore? You know?
The curiosity factor, you know?
Yes, whatever.
I just wonder how she deals with it. It's funny, they give the reality TV show to the lady with the couple there with the six kids. She's got eight kids. She didn't get a reality show.
Well, actually, she's got more than eight, because the one who has the six kids actually has eight kids, because they also have a set of twins.
Right.
But some has like 14 kids or something ridiculous.
Yeah. She does it pretty much all by herself. I guess her mother stops helping her out and everything.
Well, some of her older kids she gets paid child support for. But the Octo kids was a... better living through science kind of thing. And that was paid for on government dime, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's getting handouts left and right.
She was unemployed on government assistance when she went and had that procedure done to get pregnant.
Lay down there right now. Oh, yeah. So hooked up with the. I don't know if you're Holly, but More than welcome to.
How does that work? Hello?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here. Are we losing?
Yeah.
Oh. Uh-oh. Yeah, I guess she just hung up. Joan, she's still on. She says, how's it working? And she hangs up. All right. I'm going to get Ivo on home if it works out. He's not having a good night here. And I randomly find talks replacing us. The only thing I worry about with Ivo is the time difference. You may not have calculated it correctly there. Way down in Australia. Let's go, Ivo. Kidding, of course. Oh, so you're watching fights right now, Tony?
Yeah, I think some of these are kind of old. It looks like it's the best of something or other. Man, did I see a female knockout, Ann Wolf, who is now a trainer. I don't think she's fighting anymore.
I know she actually trained James Carpenter.
Ivo.
Now, this was a fight from 2004. She was fighting a former, a former
Hello?
Female basketball player by the name of Vonda Ward.
Hello?
We got Ivo on.
Oh, okay.
Yes, we do.
I'm just telling the story here. We got our co-host on here, Ivo. Sorry about that.
Not here on that.
Go ahead, Tony. What were you saying?
No, I was just saying I saw the first time I ever saw it was the female knockout of the decade from 2004. I'll just send it to you.
All right. So, Ivo Dos Santos, we got on the line here. How's it going?
Pretty good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Well, tell us a little bit about what you do, what you're all about. I saw that you're trying to qualify for the 2012 Olympics, right?
Yeah, that's right. So I'm a judo player from Melbourne, Australia. Fought in the 66-kilogram category, and I'm currently in the process trying to qualify for the London Olympics. And, yeah, I train about 20 hours a week, and I also coach in judo classes specifically, but as well as judo for MMA and judo for BJJ. And that's pretty much what I do day to day. And yeah.
Cool. So what do you like about judo?
Judo started when I was probably 5 years old as a kid. It's a grappling sport. It involves grappling in a gi, both standing up and on the ground. And what I like about it is... Sorry? Hello?
Yep, we're here.
Hello?
Yep, we're here.
Yeah, I got you.
Keep going.
All right, yeah, so with the grappling, it's on the ground, it's standing up, and I like the fact that the fight continues anywhere, and it's really hard, and the training's pretty grueling and intensive, and it's a really universal sport. We're represented at the World Championships last year by 180 countries, were represented at the titles. And so it's such a complex, such a well-developed sport, and it's really hard to try and compete, and really challenging.
All right. Now, have you ever tried mixed martial arts as well?
I had a fight late last year, which I was able to win in the first round, which was more sort of an experiment.
Mm-hmm. You like
Well, yeah, I do have a big interest in MMA, and I follow it very closely and that sort of thing, but it's very hard to try and train for properly as well as train for my judo career. Maybe someday once I've retired from judo, I can try and move on.
Mm-hmm.
But for the time being, I have to focus on judo.
Right. Now, do you have a favorite move or throw or something like that you like to try?
Yeah, I do. Well, my favorite throw is Ippon Sensei, which is a shoulder throw. And my favorite, I've set it up from scripts. It's treated me pretty well in my competition so far. I'm pretty happy.
Cool. How did you get started in judo?
I started when I was a young boy. We moved from Portugal, where my family was born, where I was originally, and moved to Australia. And as a young kid, we moved house to a different suburb. And the local newspaper, there was an article on the local judo club that had done pretty well at the competition tournaments. And my dad went down to training with them, and he found out they had a kids' class. He put me in, and I've been doing it ever since.
Cool. And you have a kind of an interesting last name, Dos Santos. Are you any relation to Junior?
I wish. I do try and claim that as much as I can, but I really doubt it.
Yeah.
He's from Brazil and I'm from Portugal, but it's a pretty common surname within the Portuguese-speaking community. So,
Yeah, I figured that was a long shot.
He is one of my favorite fighters, though.
Yeah, he's got good hands, that's for sure.
Very, very good hands.
And as far as judo goes, is there anybody that is a real role model for you in that sport?
Within judo currently, there's probably Teddy Riner. He's a guy from France who fights in the plus 100 kilo category, and he's an absolute beast. He's won the senior world championship twice. He's won the junior world championships twice, an Olympic bronze medal, and he's only probably lost about 3 or 4 fights in the last 5 years, and he just absolutely annihilates everyone he comes across. So he'd be definitely the one that is the measuring stick for everyone else, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And what's the qualifying like for the Olympics? Have you tried it before, or is this your first time going through it?
No, this is my second time having a legitimate attempt at it. Now, previously with a continental-based system where Europe was allocated X amount of spots, Japan, America, X amount, Asia, etc. But this time around, they changed it to a worldwide universal sort of qualifying system where the top 22 ranked players on the world rankings per weight category qualify, irrelevant of country. So you're no longer competing against the guys in your continent. You're competing against everyone around the world.
Oh, that's different. So what are your chances, you think?
Pretty good. We're about 18 months into it. It's a two-year process from May 2010 to May 2012. So there's a little while to go. At the moment, in the order of qualification, the top 22 qualify, and I'm in 15th. So at the moment, I'm there. But as you know, results can always change, and people can pass me. But so far, so good, and I'm doing the right things.
Awesome. And have you been to London before?
To London? No, I've never been to the UK. It's one of the few places in the world I haven't been to, not to train, not to compete. So I think I may end up there for a training camp early next year, but not yet. So
yeah, it's one of those places I've always wanted to visit too, being an English major in college. It's,
looking forward to it. I hope I can get there as part of the Olympics as well.
Yeah. I always wanted to go see where Shakespeare used to hang out.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
In judo, what's the most important thing that you do to get ready for a matchup?
For one particular fight or for, say, a tournament?
Both. So tell us, what's the difference between getting ready for both?
All right, so basically before a competition, probably 8 weeks out, start a specific training camp. So the first few weeks, I focus on conditioning and heavy strength work. Then the next probably month, we work on speed and get technical aspects of my throws down pat. And then the last 2 weeks is bringing back the technique and refining exact game plans for different types of players and different specific opponents. And then the last probably 3 or 4 days is all about cutting the weight, making weight, and going to compete. In terms of individual fights, the way our tournaments run, we fight the whole competition in one day. So potentially I've got 4, 5, or 6 bouts in one day. So once you've made weight in the morning, it's all about rehydrating, getting some food into your system, and preparing for that first fight. Warm up, make your body nice and warm, have everything stretched, and have your game plan in place. Once your first fight is done, then you don't know who your next opponent is or who wants to fight. And each one, you hope that it's someone you've seen before or someone you've trained with. And then you try and formulate your specific plan sort of on the go.
All right. Well, for any of those fans out there listening who don't really know what judo entails, they might think, you know, it's all throws or whatever. Can you explain exactly what the difference between judo and MMA is?
Okay. So the first and clearest thing is that there is no striking in judo. Judo is purely grappling, and you're in a gi. We have, is our takedowns are slightly different in that we have options apart from that, to control our opponent, throw them flat on their back. If you can manage to take your opponent down, control them through the air and land them on both their shoulders, flat on their back, clean, the fight's over, almost like a KO in boxing, and that's the end of the fight. However, if they land on their side or on their front, the fight continues on the ground, where we have all the submission holds that you're used to seeing through jiu-jitsu and MMA, arm bars, chokes, and we also have pins. So if you can pin someone without them having a leg hooked, without a half guard or a guard, so you can pin them on their shoulders for 25 seconds, you also win the fight. So that's the four ways of winning: a clean throw, a pin, an armbar, or a choke. So the fight really keeps going. You can win it standing up, you can win it on the ground, and then if there's no action on the ground, similar to like you see in MMA, the ref stops the fight, we get stood up, and it continues from there.
All right. So is the scoring pretty straightforward? Do you have controversies in scoring at all?
Very. Judo is they broke it down and analyzed it. It's the most over-refereed sport in the world, and that's why it's sometimes a little bit hard for people that don't know the sport to sort of understand what's going on all the time, because you could throw someone on their side, on one shoulder, over their lower back, and they turn away. It's very much up for interpretation. There's guidelines as to if someone lands on this part of their body, it's this score, it's that part, it's that score. But essentially, you have to try and throw them through the air, flat on their back as hard as you can. And if you get them to the ground, you really want to get that submission. Because with a pin, it's really hard to show that control. So that's the way you have to work through it.
All right. And as far as the environment down there, what kind of group of judo players does Australia have? Is it one of those countries that's known for it now, or is it still growing down there? How's the climate for the sport? Hello?
Well, traditionally, Australia, it is growing, and I am lucky that I live in Melbourne, which is probably the strongest city for judo in Australia, where we make up a fairly big portion of the national team. And so we have a core group that all train together across various weight categories, but really are sort of trying to put Australian judo on the map. And, so we're sort of pushing through the world rankings and that sort of thing. And I spread my training off around 3 clubs, which we have various guys that are members of different ones, but we all travel around to train together because we don't really have too many full-time gyms that we can all sort of just spend our training camp at, and it's really progressing. Probably the last 18 months we've really moved forward, and some of us starting to get some good results on the international scene, so it's working well.
Cool. And how many other Olympic hopefuls are coming out of there?
Alright, so well, in Melbourne we've got about 6 guys that are very close, either just in or just out of the qualifying zone, and probably about another 5 that are world ranked within the top 30 or 40 in the world, but not quite at the Olympic level. but still doing very well internationally. Our group is at about 10 to 12 that are at the top, and then we have a really good group of junior and lower-ranked athletes that all train together. Our total group is probably about 30 athletes that all train together.
And what would you say was the best moment so far for you in the sport?
Best moment. Hard to really pinpoint one. Probably winning the Oceania Continental Championship this year. It's our highest ranking points in the Oceania region for Olympic qualifying. And I was able to win that for the third time in a row. I've won it now, obviously, three times running. And I had a few injuries, and I had a bit of bad form, and I really wasn't feeling great coming up, leading into the fights. But I managed to perform really well on the day, and it was a really good victory.
Right.
And it contributed a lot to my rankings as well.
And is there any pro circuit for judo, or is it pretty much all amateurs?
It's pretty much all amateur. We have a few tournaments, some of the Masters tournaments. There's eight around the world, four that are considered Grand Slams and four that are considered Grand Prix, where the winners...
Oh, you cut out there. The
of each
what?
Weight category get $5,000 US, silver gets two, a bronze medal gets $1,000, and that's pretty much it with the money. But when you consider this... Sorry? There's about 80 guys enter per weight category. It's really hard to be the one guy that comes out with a bit of money. So we're very much an amateur sport. We don't have much government support in terms of our national funding and that sort of thing either. So we all sort of work around, teach judo here or there, and try to save our money to get on these trips.
So it's really a sport of where you have to have a lot of passion for it to keep up with it, I guess. Now, looking at the MMA...
Yeah, exactly right.
In MMA circles, who out there in that you watch or that you like do you think has the best judo in MMA right now?
Well, the best judo player in MMA doesn't use judo too much, and that would be probably Hector Lombard, who's the current Bellator middleweight champion.
Right.
But in terms of actually utilizing it, I really did like... Akiyama's fight with Chris Lieben a few months back. He really managed to modify his techniques to really make them practical in the MMA arena. And probably way back in the day, Caro Parisian had some really good throws and that sort of thing, but he sort of changed his style in recent times and isn't really trying to throw people as much as he's trying to control them, but it is still really good when he does pull off some of those big throws. And, yeah.
Yeah, actually, I think he was probably the first one to really put judo on the map in MMA to get people talking about it. And I do remember when he was using it a lot. But I think he just got derailed by more you know, problems than just losing his jiu-jitsu. I mean, losing his judo technique. He got involved in pill popping and taking prescription drugs too much and was just off the radar for so long. And then when he finally got back into it, I think he kind of forgot his whole core, unfortunately. But he's still out there.
Yeah.
What's it like, you know, being involved in a sport like that where it's, you know, there's really not much of a pro opportunity and the Olympics is really the pinnacle?
It makes for a very, very, very difficult existence in that you have to work either a full-time job or a part-time job. You can try and study around it, and it's really hard to balance everything. It takes a lot of time away from your family, and that's probably why a lot of judo players from the eastern sort of countries, the US, Canada, Australia, these sorts of countries that don't have very good funding in their sport, probably a lot of judo players retire early. They don't sort of finish the absolute end of their career because there comes a point where they want to get married, buy a house, have all those things, and it's impossible to balance that amateur athletic career. And it also does sort of lead, and these days what we're seeing is it is having judo players sort of leave the international judo scene to do sports like in MMA because it's somewhere they can use their skills, but progress into an actual professional career. You've got people like Ronda Rousey, Roddy Ferguson, Rick Horn. These guys have probably had a couple of years of good judo left in them, but they've decided to go to MMA for a new challenge and also to really try and make a living out of the skills that they got through their judo training.
Now, as far as, you know, going all the way back, as long as you followed the sport, who do you think is the best judo player ever?
In judo ever?
Yeah.
Very difficult. There's a lot of standouts. I can say my personal favorite is a Dutch guy called Mark Heldinger. He, in his career, won 2 Olympic bronze medals and the gold medal at the Sydney Olympics. And he was just a phenomenal judo player because he wasn't stereotypical to one certain... He didn't have one great throw or one great submission. He could go through any range of techniques, and he was so unpredictable, and it was phenomenal.
All right. Now, a lot of people might think automatically it's got to be Japan. It's the best country at it. Is that true, or is there another country that's pretty dominant?
That's definitely true. If you add up all the total results, they do better than anyone else. But their judo is such a worldwide, international sport that the French team are very strong. The Brazilians are very strong at the moment. The Korean team are very strong. There isn't one dominant force in judo. There is obviously the Japanese invented it, and they are probably better than most. And they do have a lot more depth than other countries. But I think most of our international tournaments, there's 14 weight categories, 7 for men, 7 for women. If Japan wins 3 gold medals, then they say Japan dominated the competition. But when you think about it, 11 were won by different countries. So there's no real dominating force in judo. It's anyone on the day can win.
Cool. What else? Now, do you have any role models outside the sport that has helped you out?
Role models that set the sort of bar for my training, and I watched his tapes, not even DVDs, of showing how he used to train when he was young and that sort of thing. And that was something that really, really motivated me and really showed me sort of how hard it is. If you want to get to the top of a sport, you really have to dedicate yourself 110% every day just to hope that one day you'll eventually be good enough to perform at that level. But he's always been a really big role model of mine. I also really like Lance Armstrong, and obviously it's very clear the adversity he went through, and to come back in the absolute hardest physical pursuit in the world, which is the Tour de France, and not just perform there, but to dominate, and to dominate for so long. Anyone with half a brain has to understand how hard that is, and yeah, I'd probably say those two are really big standouts for me.
Who was the first one? You got cut out there for a second.
Oh, sorry, Michael Jordan?
Oh, Michael Jordan. That's interesting.
Yes.
Wait, did you fight him?
Actually, I had the unique experience in college of fighting a boxer named Michael Jordan.
Rich, let's not forget. Didn't I fight him too?
Yeah, you beat him. I lost to him. But mine was in the semifinals of the Nationals after I'd already had one fight. And I won that fight, and then I went on against Jordan. And Jordan was an inside fighter. He liked to throw the uppercuts and, you know, get you on the inside, and my game was better throwing a jab from the outside, and I just kind of got caught into his game. So I didn't do too well there. I lost on decision, and I was kind of glad though, because he went on to the finals, and the finals are on the ESPN Sports, which is pretty big here in the United States, and Jordan got knocked out by the guy from the Air Force Academy. he was like 30 seconds or something. He just got blown away. So I avoided the chance to get knocked out on national TV. Good. I got a bronze medal out of it, too.
You might have beat the chance.
Yeah, might have. If it was a miracle, but...
You got to remember, I mean, and he beat a friend of mine that is now a 18-1 professional. But Styles didn't fight. I fought him on one leg, and I took him off three rounds. Started coming back to the third round a little bit. He was a guy that if you took his best early, you could take him out. He couldn't be intimidated. If I would have had two good legs and a little scouting, I might have beat him.
Yeah.
And I still believe that 13 years later.
Yeah, I just, I don't know, it was like one of those fights where I was conscious of the fact that it was a tournament, you know, and I'm sure you can relate to this, Ivo, that when you're in a tournament situation, sometimes you think, you know, I got to conserve energy, you know, I can't put it all on the line right now, right this second. I just got to do enough to win. And,
sometimes you shoot yourself in the foot, though.
Yeah, you gotta go all out sometimes or nothing. Yeah, so that was my mistake there, but no regrets, you know. I look back every now and then and think, what if, but always comes back to that thing, seeing that guy get knocked out so quick by a guy with unbelievable reach. I mean, this guy was, I don't even know how he made the weight for 185. He was, looked like to me like he was about 7 feet tall. He just had incredible reach and could hit you from your stool while he was across the ring.
Yeah, you get those sorts of unorthodox, strange body shape guys in judo too, and you just can't get your bearings, and it's so hard to try and get your range and try and figure something to do.
I keep cutting out on you. I don't know what's going on. You know, figure since I'm using Skype, you should be coming in clear. So it's the distance difference. Wow, this is a first. Skype's telling me there's a problem with this call. Hold on while we try to get the call back.
You there?
Yeah, we lost you there for a second. That was weird. You went into a black hole.
But you can hear us. You can hear me.
Yeah. We can hear you
Rich,
now.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you now. Can you hear us? Hello. Ivo.
I can hear
him. Oh, he hung up.
Oh.
That's weird. This guy's black. I don't know how he's calling back.
That's good.
So you got to ask a question, Tony. I'm getting worn out here.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
All right, we're back.
Yeah. So what were you saying when we cut you off?
I think you were talking about the range of a guy you were fighting and how hard it was to get your bearings. And I was saying it's a very similar thing we have sometimes in judo where we have guys that fight lefty, guys that fight right, probably equivalent of a southpaw in boxing. And sometimes they've got hold of your collar and you've got both hands outstretching. You're not even touching their gi, and it's really hard to try and figure out how you're going to throw them.
One thing I kind of learned during my tenure, and now I train other guys now. I have one guy that I'm training who actually is the same body type as this guy that Rich and I were talking about. He's about 6'1", 6'2", and he's only about 140-some, 150 pounds. And that's not even in competition shape. I mean, if he really trained to, like, get his weight, like, and for a fight, he could probably get down to, like, less than 140. And wow. And you get a guy 6'2", with these long arms. When I train him, you know, you have a certain style you got to implement to him. Now, I got two friends that I'm training. They come to the gym together all the time. And I said, if you could ever find two polar opposites, and it's actually very challenging for me as a trainer because I kind of teach them both at the same time. I had the one guy, he's right-handed, about 6'2", about 140-some, 150 pounds. He's got very fast feet, but his hands are, you know, not caught up to his feet yet. But he's doing well. The other kid is about 5'10", about 240 pounds, southpaw, and he has very clumsy feet, and he doesn't move very well, but he has very natural punching power. And you know, you're working with both these guys, and right now I'm teaching them both the basics. So I make them do, you know, you got to learn how to move, you got to learn how to set your feet, you got to learn balance, you got to learn these punches, and obviously one southpaw, so from the opposite direction. But I'm teaching them the basics. But then what I do is I separate them, and one goes work on the heavy bag, and the other one I kind of tailor little things to. I said, the one guy, I said, you're a very strong physical guy. I said, what you got to do is you got to, and you're left-handed, you got to work this way and get on angles. I said, because if you don't do that, you're going to get killed. And then the other guy, I said, what you got to do is learn to use your height. Don't crouch down. What are you doing? Are you nuts? Don't take that advantage away. So that definitely what it's like. You have all these types of skills, all these types of body types, and you got to teach them the basics first and then work to their advantages.
Sure.
What else do you do outside of the sport? Do you have any hobbies? Or, like you said, you got to have a day job, right?
Yeah. So, for a day job, I work at Melbourne Airport. I handle baggage.
I'll get you in shape. how about
for a couple of the airlines there, which I do that about 20 to 25 hours a week. Aside from that, I do judo coaching at a couple. Yeah, there's some heavy bags that I've got to throw around sometimes. And aside from that, my hobbies and pastimes are generally just hanging out, watching movies and that sort of thing with my partner, my girlfriend, and spending some time with my family, with that sort of thing. But it's very difficult because I'm always in between training sessions, in between coaching. I'm all over the place. So one day when my judo career settles down a little bit, I'll be able to actually take up things like playing basketball socially and that sort of thing, which I'd really like, doing a bit more MMA and all those sorts of things that really interest me.
All right. And as far as in your weight class there, looking ahead to the Olympics, who's the guy that you either most want to fight, or who's the guy that you think is the toughest one in your weight class?
The number one guy in my division is a guy from Mongolia with an enormous surname, which I'll hope to pronounce right in saying it's Sangbatar. There's a lot of A's and a lot of G's, but I fought him one time in Brazil last year, and it was my first competition after an elbow reconstruction, and he beat me in about a minute and a half. He was able to throw me. And although he's the best player in the world and a world champion and everything else, I really feel like his style matches up well to mine, and I'd really love a chance to have another shot at him. And I'm not saying I'd win, but I definitely would like to really test myself against him. And he's got to be the favorite going into all the world events because he's just dominated the world scene with probably four or five of the biggest tournament wins across the last 12 to 18 months.
All right. Yeah, that kind of reminds me of that situation in high school. I didn't have an injury, but I was way down in weight compared to this one guy, and it's probably the only time in any sport I've been just completely dominated. And my coach said, you know, just don't get pinned. Sends me out there, don't get pinned. And I had to drink a gallon of water just to make weight for this fight because they had to bump me up from 171, where I was actually fighting already, given the other guy at least 6 pounds. I was traditionally weighing about 156 to 160. And, you know, I kind of got used to sticking around 160 or above at this point of the season. And the coach says, you got to drink a gallon of water to make weight for 189 because we're going to bump you up tonight. And the guy that I was going against was a three-time state champion. So they throw me out there. And,
whoa.
Just don't get pinned. And, of course, about 30 seconds later, he has got me wrapped up in a pretzel. It was like a triangle choke move or something to get me in the pin. And, man, I've never been twisted like that in my life. And that was it. So I can relate, but, you know, when it's a guy that's your actual weight, it's even worse, I can imagine. So.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with our weight classes now, we have a lot of weight cutting going on, and I don't have to cut much. So in pounds, I probably cut about 10 pounds to make weight, but there's guys that cut 20 to 22. So although we're the same weight class, when we step on the mat, there's some guys that are much bigger than me.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty hard to move them.
That's one thing about all the fighting sports. It's kind of, that's the one thing in common that they all have is, you know, the lower weight that you can get, the better you're supposed to be. And it's amazing to look at some people and you know, realize what they have to do to get to weight and, you know, and just to wonder sometimes how the hell they did it.
Yeah, pretty phenomenal stuff they've got to go through and amazing willpower to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one guy that we had on our team that was actually the guy who was supposed to be at 189 who used to bring this giant cooler to every fight. And he would face so much difficulty just trying to make weight every time that immediately after you get on the scale, he'd sit there and, like, just eat everything in the cooler. It was always funny to watch him because one particular fight, where I actually got a nice win in overtime. And I was hoping to get the coach's designation of the outstanding wrestler of the night, but it went to him because he was at 189 and he comes into the fight and he had horrible diarrhea. And he gets on the mat and wrestles his kid and pins him in literally 10 seconds. And as soon as the whistle's blown, he runs off the mat and just plows through the double doors of the gym to the bathroom. He had to go to the bathroom so bad. He knew he was going to have to pin his guy right away. One of the funny
Now, my experience with making the weight like that is I couldn't eat anything. I could barely drink anything. My big weight cut was 15 pounds in less than 3 days. And it was tough on me because I'd never done it before. And I know people are saying, like, oh, my God, sweet, I'm done. I'm grabbing, like, a sandwich. I'm grabbing, you know, like a big Gatorade. And I got there, and we were on our drive there. And I was at my gym at Lock Haven, and I stepped on the scale, and I was just teetering at 165. And on the way there, they gave me a cup, and they're, like, spinning it on the way. And I'm just like, I was mist coming out of my mouth. It wasn't even liquid. And I got on the scale, made the weight, and I had to buy that night, but I had to make the weight again the next day. So when I got on the scale, as soon as I got off, I mean, I took everything off. I mean, I was stripped of the skivvies. I was even thinking about shaving my head if I had to. And I got off, and I remember I ran over to a spigot, and I just took about 3 or 4 mouthfuls of water, and I said, oh, this water here tastes bad. It tastes metallic. Everybody kind of looked at me. And a friend of mine had a Gatorade. It was I think it was frost flavor I never had before. And I said, George, can I have just a mouthful? That's all I want. And I took a mouthful. And I said, oh, my God, George. I said, is that Gatorade sour? He goes, what are you talking about? I'm like, it tastes bad. And then everybody kind of looked at me. They're like, no, it's not the Gatorade that's bad. It's you. This is for making the weight. It's like you're actually having like almost like reactions. Well, I didn't eat anything all day. I think I had an orange sliver that night because I just couldn't eat nothing. I went, made the weight again the next day. And then, you know, I had to fight that night, the finals. And they're like, you know, you have to go get something to eat. And I'm like, I really don't want anything. They're like, no, you have to eat something. So they took me down, and a friend of mine took me to Subway. I got a 6-inch sub. Now, they're talking about a guy right here. I mean, I can usually polish up right now. You give me an 18-inch hoagie, I'll polish it right off. Went to Subway, 6-inch sub, couldn't finish it. And then I fought that night. I had beaten this guy before, and I lost in the third round by 1 point on a knockdown because my legs couldn't hold me up anymore. So the next day, they told me, hey, you're going to nationals a weight class higher. So relax a little bit. You can have some food. You know, you don't have to cut like you did for this one. I was like, oh, thank God. And we were at lunch in the cafeteria, and everybody's eating. All my friends are eating. And I'm like, everything I looked at actually made me physically sick. And my girlfriend at the time would not leave until I ate something. She made me, like, it was like a slice of pizza or something, like a real thin slice. And she actually sat there until I ate it. Because everybody knew if they would leave, and I'm like, yeah, I'll eat the pizza. I would let that little pie throw it in the garbage. Like, that's how sick and sick Nick Waite made me feel.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah, it's not easy.
Well, Ivo, we're getting close to the end of our show here. Do you got any final thoughts or anybody you want to thank or give a shout-out to or anything?
Shout-out definitely to my sponsors, like the Grappling Store, which is my biggest sponsor in Melbourne here. They help me out with my gears and that sort of thing. They're phenomenal. And also Crazy Martial Arts Supplies based in Sydney. They also help me out with a lot of my travel expenses and my training equipment. Apart from that, all my training partners, if somehow they get to watch this or hear this, it'll be fantastic. And I hope anyone that's taken interest in hearing my story wants to follow it further can have a look at my website or my blog and see the information I put out there and follow my results. And especially to you guys, thanks for having me on. It's a real honor to be on your show and be able to discuss things I do and have you guys take an interest in it.
Well, it's always great to have some... a little bit of variety on our show, and typically we have boxers or MMA fighters, occasionally somebody with wrestling. We've had a couple grapplers on one, but it's always good to have something new on, and you're the first judo guy that's done pretty much exclusively judo that we've ever had on the show, so that's it's an honor for us to be able to expand our horizons, I guess, and chat with you. So thanks for you know, taking the
thank you very much for having me.
And anybody that wants to check you out can click on the link on our blog. We got you linked up on the left-hand side, or actually the right-hand side of the blog. And also, you can tell your friends, just check out fightradio.info if they want to check out your interview. It's going to be on the second half of the show we did tonight. So it's always good to talk to new people, so thanks a lot.
Oh, thank you guys very much.
Right. Have a good night.
All right, Rich, well, I guess I'm out of here too, man. Peace out and good luck and talk to you later.
All right, till next week, folks. We're out.